Hi everyone, and welcome to Making Miracles Charity's podcast, Baby Loss, Grief and Love. We're the first UK baby loss charity to start a podcast. We're relatable, professional and knowledgeable. Our team is here to aim to support you and the whole family through trauma and baby loss. We have a range of people on our podcast, such as healthcare professionals, counsellors, families with lived-in experience, and much, much more. To take part, please contact me, Kelly, at makingmiracles.org.uk. Thank you. Hi, everyone, and welcome to this week's podcast. Today, we are joined by the lovely Bec, who is going to talk to us about her experience of loss, why she wanted to come on today, and, well, I'll let you explain. I won't go on too much. Welcome. Hello.
Thank you. Hi, everyone. I'm Bec. My story goes back quite a long time in that when I was growing up, I never wanted children and I never felt particularly maternal. And I spent years and years saying, no to kids, no to kids, don't want them, don't want them. And then as a woman does, we change our mind. I met my partner. And we decided after a couple of years that it's something we wanted to try for. And so we started trying in late June, early July. And come August, very surprisingly, had my first positive test after just a month of trying. I was so shocked. Didn't know what to do. My partner was at work. I actually went for a run just to try and... try and just absorb the news and figure out a way of telling him. And so that night I'd done a little box with a couple of baby items in, a pair of mittens and a hat and the pregnancy test. I remember thinking to myself, I'm not going to tell him before dinner because what if he doesn't eat his dinner? And I was so conscious that he wouldn't eat. So I gave this box to him after dinner as a surprise. And it was, we were just so happy, like we just held each other for ages. It was just the best news ever, because we thought about it so much and it was something we really wanted, even though at this point he'd already had a daughter who was 11. It was quite a, I don't want to say a difficult conversation, but I was very aware that he'd already been through fatherhood, he'd had a daughter already who was fast approaching becoming a teenager, and the impact it would have on her and him being a slightly older dad. So, yeah, we quickly got lost in that bubble of excitement together, thinking of all the things you do as a family going forward for the future. You think about, you know, how you're going to tell everyone that means the most to you. We thought of loads of ideas of how we could include his daughter because it was really important to us that she didn't feel pushed out or anything. And we went through this for a good month or so, like with this excitement. I'd had a couple of incidences, very minor ones, of like a bit of spotting. And a friend who'd had a baby sort of 7 months beforehand, I know from her pregnancy, she said that she'd had that and it was quite normal. So I didn't worry at all at that point. The second time it happened, I did phone the call the midwife number from the midwifery team that I had. And she said, oh, it just sounds the same, just sounds like spotting, just rest, complete rest for tonight, see how you are in the morning. Absolutely fine. For the next few weeks or so, we just got through our date for our scan, which was going to be the 3rd of October. And we'd had our booking appointment and everything was going fine. And then I woke up on a Monday morning in September and went to the bathroom, morning wee, and I can picture it even now, and it still bothers me when I go to the loo now. I remember looking down into the pan and just seeing two drips of blood, and that was it. I just knew. And when I contacted my partner, Dan, he was like, it's fine, it's just the same as you've had before, don't worry about it, just go rest up for a bit before you go to work, and we'll keep an eye on it. And then, so I lay back on the bed, and I was like texting him all throughout the morning going, no, I don't think this is right. It's not stopping. It seems to be getting worse. So I was back and forth to the toilet quite a bit. And this was probably about 9 a.m. No, before that, it must be about 8, because I was due to start work at 10. And I made a decision. I was like, no, something doesn't feel right. Like I think I'm going to phone up the call the midwife number again. I had such difficulties getting through to them. I think I can't tell you how many times I tried and I just kept getting cut off, or the signal wasn't very good, or they weren't answering the phone. I don't know if it was because maybe the time of the morning, but I finally got through and she said that they'd refer me to the early pregnancy assessment centre for a scan, but they couldn't get through to the booking system at the hospital. So I had to call back in an hour and I thought, I'm not waiting any longer. So I took myself off to a hospital. But before I did that, I felt like I don't know whether to describe it as a balloon or something popping in my tummy and a massive tingle sensation in my stomach. And I thought, oh, what is that? Now I look back on it and I think maybe that was sort of baby coming away. So I went to the hospital. They'd done a urine test to make sure that I was pregnant before they could refer me. And then they again had real trouble in getting through to the EPAC team upstairs. By this point, Dan had travelled all the way back from London. He'd only been at work probably half an hour before I told him he needed to come home. And he was lovely. But I could see he was scared as well. But he kept trying to say things like, oh, it's bound to be a girl. That's why she's doing this, because, you know, she's going to be a bit of a pain, you know, just trying to make me laugh and think positively going forward. It must have been an hour or so later, and they were still trying to get through to this team upstairs to do a scan, that the referral had come through from the midwives and the EPAC team had phoned me and said, where are you now? And I said, oh, I'm downstairs in Medoc. And they said, come up, we'll scan you in an hour. So I was like, okay. So we went upstairs, had to fill out this form. And I remember seeing on the bottom of the form, confirmed miscarriage, yes or no. And I pointed it out to Dan. And he was like, don't look at it. Don't think about that. Don't worry. And all throughout this, we'd come up sort of the early afternoon. I'd been back and forth to the loo and it was just getting worse. And then we went into the room and we saw a lady called Esther, who was lovely at the hospital. And I think because she was so lovely, that's why she sticks in my mind a lot. But she'd done an internal scan, which was, it wasn't painful, but it wasn't pleasant because I was bleeding. And then you've got your partner with you. There was just a lot going on in the room. And she said that the baby was measuring 6 weeks when I should have been over 10, nearly 11. So I just knew then, because I knew from tracking my period that it wasn't a case of I've got irregular periods and I'd miscalculated sort of my dates. I knew for sure. And I just laid and sat on that bed. So I couldn't move. And Dan actually had to dress me because I just was a state. I just remember crying and saying, I can't move, I can't move. I think maybe just a bit of shock.
It's trauma.
Yeah. And she didn't specifically say, yes, you've had a miscarriage. She said, come back next week and we'll see if, you know, the baby's sort of grown anymore. But, you know, you are expected to be nearly 11 weeks and baby's measuring about 6. So she gave me sort of a leaflet and the contact details for the bereavement midwives. And she said, if it gets any worse, come back, like phone us and come back. And I left my car at the hospital because I couldn't drive home. So Dan drove us home. And then it just progressed then throughout the evening. And we knew that that was sort of the end of it. And we went back the next day just to confirm it. And unfortunately, there was still quite a lot of, like, so the baby had gone, that had passed, but I was still left with quite a lot of other tissue.
Mm.
So then they said, oh, you need some, you know, you've got some options here. You can wait for it to pass naturally, or you can have treatment. So I said, oh, what's the treatment options? And they said, you can have tablets, or that you can have an operation. And I said, oh, well, the baby's definitely gone. And Dan was with me for that. So let's just do the op. I just want done. Like, I just, you know, I don't want to prolong the pain night anymore. And the physical side of it, just get it done. And they were like, oh no, we advise that you don't do the operation and we go for the medical management first. And I was like, but you gave me the option, so let me pick. But then me and Dan had a conversation and he was like, think about it. You're going to be under anaesthetic and that's going to have an impact on you. Let's just try the other way first. But because I've had a gastric bypass, so weight loss surgery, my stomach doesn't have the same absorbency as someone else.
Right.
So I couldn't have the tablets. I had to have pessaries, which was another examination. So it was all quite invasive and quite traumatic. But I then had to go back for another scan after that just to make sure the extra tissues had gone, and they had. So
it worked.
Yeah, it took about a week or so, but the treatment had worked.
So where did that leave you emotionally?
Complete despair. And I mean, Dan's work were kind enough to give him that week off, that Monday to Friday off. But then I quickly found myself all on my own every day. And I did hit the self-destruct button quite hard. I was drinking quite a bit just to feel something and nothing at the same time. Wasn't sleeping. I cried every day for 4 weeks. I don't cry as much now, but at the time it was every day, relentless for 4 weeks. And I had some lovely messages of support from friends and family, because we hadn't told anyone until it had happened, because we was not necessarily waiting for the scan, but it was very important to us as a family that we told his daughter first before anyone else. So we were waiting for the scan, then to see her, and then we'll tell everyone else. But we needed that support, I think.
Yeah.
Whereas we're normally the type of people and couple that just get on with it and deal with things ourselves. But it was the practical things, like my car was miles away at hospital. We needed to get my car back out of the car park. Dan would have to go back to work the following Monday. So my work had to know, because I wasn't going back to work for a little while. And we had lovely cards and messages and flowers and things for support. But neither of us had anyone really close to us that had been through the same. So it was very isolating as well. Since this has happened to us, and Dan said a few things to people at his work where he's had colleagues that have said, oh, yeah, it's happened to us. And I worried a lot about him, because I don't want to say it's stereotypical, but the males can get, or partners, the ones that don't physically go through it, they don't get, I feel, as much support as they could do. Yeah, I was looking at things for him, male specific, so he could link in with people that have done the gone through the same. But he wasn't open to them. He very much wanted to just, like he said to me once, just want to focus on you. If I focus on you, I'm fine. I need to make sure you're doing okay.
That typical fixer.
Yeah, absolutely.
And look after woman.
The bereavement midwives at the hospital forwarded your details onto me, like the charity details onto me. And it was coming up to Baby Loss Awareness Week. And I said to Dan, like, look at all this stuff that they're doing. It's like, I know it's really soon, but I'd like to go to the church in Rainham. Is it St. Michael's?
St. Margaret's, yeah.
St. Margaret's. And I was like, would you mind coming with me? And he was like, yeah, I'll meet you there after work and we'll go do we done a star on an umbrella. And we sat in the church pews, we was listening to the music and looking at the umbrella, where Dan had written a note, because I wanted him to write it, because I wanted to know what he'd put, because he hadn't really spoken much about what had happened. And he hugged me really close and he just said, thank you so much for finding this. And I just cried even more, because I thought, he's actually said something now. And I kind of needed him. I needed to know he felt the same to an extent, although he wasn't as vocal and couldn't be as vocal.
Yeah.
And then we were referred to joint counselling by yourself, which has been really, really helpful for us as a couple.
Good.
And it actually brought out quite a lot of things that we hadn't realised was having an impact as well. So, yeah.
Oh, amazing. And I know you said off air, really, because of that, not knowing anyone that had been through it, you did find it really isolating. And we were talking about the importance of coming on today. Because I said to you, why do you want to come on today? And it was to talk about it for you, as in it brings you some kind of comfort.
Yeah.
And we were talking about why that might be, which we'll talk about in a minute. But you also were saying, you know, because it was so isolating for you, you wanted to be there for others as well and share your story, and so no one else feels that isolated too.
Yeah, absolutely.
So that's really lovely. with regards to, we were talking off air saying, you know, Beck was saying, oh, I don't know why, but it does make me feel better talking about it. And I think that's one thing that a lot of people that come on the podcast do, not enjoy, but take away a positive from this and think, I'm really glad I did it because I got to talk about the baby. Mm-hmm. And I like talking about the baby because the baby did matter. The baby was here, was part mm-hmm. of our lives, part of our family. And it gives them validation for the baby because sometimes it is like it gets brushed over and people are very quick to forget that you've had a miscarriage.
Yeah.
And I think that's really important, that validation for the baby. Also validation for you and all your feelings around what happened. There's also obviously the movement of Say Their Name to get people talking about it. And I know for you it was important to talk about it because no one does talk about it. I think that's the reasons why people come on, and people should be really proud for coming on. And, you know, it is brave. It is a bit scary, isn't it? Not knowing what you're going to say or what you're going to sound like, or if you are going to help anyone out there, if anyone does get it and relate. But absolutely everyone that's been through what you have, and obviously everyone's journey is different, but they will relate to you and they will understand. And I think it's having that group culture that we can all go, we get it.
Yeah.
And that's why the events like the church and stuffed up at the baby garden that we do is so important. Baby Loss Awareness Week, so important, because it's about having a community of bereaved parents that get it.
Yeah, and I remember saying to Dan when we was at the church, because I actually went 3 times that week. I come back 2 further times just to sit on my own. And I said to him, you know, we haven't even spoken to anyone, you know, when we've been here and when I went on my own. But it's the first time I felt almost comfortable being outside and being around people, just knowing that they get it.
Mm.
Because it felt everywhere, no one could get it. No one understood properly, you know, exactly how we felt. And even though, like I say, we didn't speak to anyone, just sitting in a room with loads of other families and people that have been through it just brought some comfort to know that we're not on our own.
And I think seeing the umbrellas with the names, as heartbreaking as it is, you don't want to see that many names.
No.
But as heartbreaking as that is, you can sit there and go, all these babies are the same as our baby. And you do get it. And you do feel like you're not alone because you're surrounded by, you know, dates and names and memories and messages. And it does make you feel part of something bigger. And I think that's what's really important to know, that, you know, anyone out there suffering on their own is part of this bigger movement, and they can be part of it even more so by doing events such as Baby Loss Awareness Week. And if you don't live, you know, in Kent near us, there are lots of other events going on throughout the country. If you live abroad, Baby Loss Awareness Week with the Wave of Light, particularly, it's worldwide. You can be a part of something without having to, you know, be there.
Yeah.
It could be virtual, it could be, you know, a visit, it could be reaching out, sharing your story online, it could be coming on the podcast, even if you do live elsewhere in the country or world. We do Zooms. And I just think it's really important to keep talking about baby loss, because far too often it goes unnoticed and unmentioned. And especially, as you say, like your partners meeting people, talking to people at work about it, and them going, oh, that happened to us. It takes someone to say it happened to me for someone else to say it happened to me as well.
Yeah.
Because a lot of people, especially with miscarriage, and as you say, family and friends didn't even know you're pregnant yet, think, oh, we'll just deal with this on our own. Otherwise, it's almost like giving someone a present and taking it back. Oh, we're pregnant, but no, we're not.
Yeah.
I feel, you know, it's very hard.
Massively like a letdown and a failure for a very long time.
Mm.
And that's what we worked a lot with the counsellor on through Making Miracles. And counselling was that it wasn't my fault. And it's really hard to say that. It's taken me all this time to say that it wasn't.
Mm.
Because every day I was saying it must have been me.
Mm.
Despite doing, you know, everything they tell you to do beforehand, I couldn't in my mind process how I'd done everything right. And yet it went wrong. And then there's people out there that
do everything wrong and it works okay for them.
And
it really is a horrible, and I've said this time and time again, it sounds like I'm being harsh, but it's just a horrible draw of bad luck. It's not what you've done right or wrong, or, you know, there is no rhyme or reason to baby loss. It just happens and it's horrible. And for us to blame ourselves is just so unfair.
Mm.
And beat yourself up on it, about it, you know, like you said, you went on self-destruct, you're already low as it is, you then just go lower and lower and lower until, you know, you get to a point where you're like, right, I need to stop now, and I need to make myself feel better, and I need to get through this.
Yeah, and that's exactly what happened.
Yeah, and grief is the most natural thing in the world. You'd be weird if you didn't grieve the way we grieve. But the thing that really worries me about us and our mental health, especially as women, is that self-blame. You know, because we carried a baby, what, it's our fault if the baby's got something wrong with it. It's not our fault.
No.
You know, it's not the baby's fault. It's no one's fault. But we essentially are an incubator. And you wouldn't go and think a hospital incubator was broken and it was the incubator's fault if a baby passed away that had been born and put in an incubator. But we do it to ourselves. Yeah. And really, they're the same thing. And, you know, the amount of women I sit and have this conversation with, and I just feel so sad that they put that on themselves even more.
Yeah, and it takes a long time. It certainly did for me to sort of climb back out of that.
Yeah.
A long time. It's only really, I would say, been the last few weeks, 4 weeks maybe, where I've tried to turn that corner a little bit and
yeah,
try and say to myself, it's not down to you. It's awful, yes, and it's really, really distressing at the time. And some days are still really, really challenging. But you couldn't have done anything more than what you did. But it's being kind enough to yourself to say that and allow your mind to think that, you know, it wasn't your fault. And then that's what I feel has made me turn that corner and that light's come on a little bit more. And I think as well, I'm talking about it a little bit more. Like you said, almost like to validate the baby, validate how I feel and what we've been through as a family.
But so you should. I get that. You know, so you should talk about it. There's nothing. I think the main thing is, and it's a British thing, isn't it? We don't want to upset anyone. We don't like complaining. We don't like, you know, doing anything to it that we think is going to make someone else feel uncomfortable.
Yeah.
But actually, you've got to put yourself first. And if that helps you in your process, I'm sure family and friends would happily talk to you about it. It's more about them through fear of upsetting you that they don't.
Yeah.
So there's like this barrier that's put up, and it's an assumption. The barrier goes up, this assumption of, we won't mention baby because we don't upset her. Oh, she looks all right today. She just smiled. We don't want to mention the baby. Yeah. She might cry. We don't want to make it awkward. We don't want to, you know, like, it's so difficult. And I get it. Friends and family, especially who don't understand and haven't been there, won't know what to do with you.
Right. And they don't realise that actually putting up that barrier and, oh, yeah, she has smiled today. She's had a bit of a laugh. We won't mention it. Can in some ways make me feel worse because I want to talk about it.
Yeah. It can isolate you, can't it?
Yeah, absolutely. So you can look like you're having a great time in the room, but really all you can think about is, I should be this far along in my pregnancy by now, and we should be looking forward to doing this as a family and that as a family. But they will talk about anything other than what you've been through.
Yeah.
And I think it is more so because they don't know how to approach it, rather than, you know, they do care, of course they do.
Yeah.
But they just don't know how to verbalise it in a way that's going to benefit you, maybe.
Yeah. And I just think everyone's scared.
Yeah.
Everyone's frightened. It's like the elephant in the room, isn't it?
Massively, yeah.
Everyone's frightened to mention it because no one wants to be upsetting anyone. I think as well, when people don't know what to say, that and say nothing sometimes can be better than not knowing what to say and saying something wrong.
Yes.
Because obviously defences are very high. We're very emotional.
Yeah.
We're very protective. And if something's said in the wrong way, that can also go quite badly. So I think there's that fear of that as well. So it's almost like, I don't know what to say. I don't want to say the wrong thing. So I'll say nothing. I'll let them talk to me. But then for you, you're feeling like the whole world's just carrying on like normal and no one is validating the fact that you've just lost a baby.
Yeah.
And I think you're all right now.
I often said that, you know, especially at the beginning. It's like everything's still going. The world's still spinning and I'm stuck. And I just couldn't move. You know, especially when Dan went back to work as well, I couldn't go back to work that quick because of the treatment and everything, but I was at home all day on my own, waiting for him to get in and just going through the motions. It's actually quite, you know, you don't have much memory of the day to day because it's all just a blur. Big blur. Yeah.
It's like brain fog.
Yeah, massively. And I still feel like I have brain fog a bit now, to an extent, especially with work, when I'm back at work and I'm not as quick at doing things as I used to be. Yeah. Because my brain is still so busy with everything else.
Yeah, it's like chaos, isn't it? And it's trauma. That's the thing with trauma as well. It can block some of the everyday stuff that's going on out, and it puts it to like another part of the brain as almost like a self-protection for you, because you don't want to, your brain doesn't want to overwhelm you with emotion.
Yeah.
So it's really confusing and chaotic. And that's why, like, I think I always say to people, if you've got stuff in your head, write it down. If you've got something you want to say to someone, or someone's really paid you off or said the wrong thing or done something, write them a letter. Don't necessarily send it, because we need to think about that.
Yeah.
Often as well, in anger. But just get it out of your head.
Yeah.
Get out of your own head. Get your head clear. Get your head thinking, right, okay, this has happened. I'm not accepting it. It's not okay. But I need a level of acceptance here to be able to step forward. And to be able to start getting out of my hole that I'm in, because I've been so miserable. And I don't want to live the rest of my life miserable.
No.
I want to be happy. I want to have a family. I want to move forward with what happens as part of that. Because when something like that happens to you, it is a part of you now. That experience won't leave you, will it?
And I think moving forward, it's important to remind yourself that it doesn't mean you're forgetting. And that's something I've really been trying to sort of remind myself of frequently lately, you know, with going back to work and doing all these things and meeting up with friends again, seeing family a bit more, sort of trying to get back to the day to day. Is that even though I'm doing that, it doesn't mean I've forgotten.
No.
Whereas for a long time I was in this stage of, if I do this, people are just going to assume that I'm okay now and I've forgotten and I'm over it and I'm not, and I won't forget it.
And I think that's important as well, that if people do say you're okay, our tendency is to go, yeah, I'm fine. Or, yeah, I'm all right, you're all right. We dismiss it too much. And there's a thing, I can't remember, I think I've said this before, but there is a thing to say, ask if you're okay twice. Ask someone who is in pain if they're okay twice, or say, are you really okay? And then pause. And let them actually think, am I okay? Because we say it as like a rebound kind of, hi. You okay? Yeah, I'm okay. Like, there's no thought process in there, is there?
No.
And if people actually went to you, are you okay? You can actually be honest and go, I'm not having the best day. It's not gone away, but I'm doing all right today. Thank you for asking. And that kind of conversation will get them to ask you again.
Yeah.
Or they might go, look, if you're having a bad day, come talk to me about it. It just gets people still being very aware that, yeah, you are back at work. Yeah, you are going out with friends again, seeing people and trying to live your life, not being stuck indoors, you know, in bed on your self-destruct mode. But that does not mean the end of the process has occurred. This is a process that will be with you for a very, very long time, if not forever.
Yeah.
And they need to just go, you know, are you all right, really? But you need to also be brave enough to be honest and not go, yeah, I'm okay. You know, and you might be having an okay day, but it's okay to go, I'm actually having an okay today, but thanks for asking, because last week was really tough.
Yeah.
And these triggers come out of nowhere, and reminders come out of nowhere, and social media, you're seeing everyone else get on with their lives and their families, that comes out of nowhere.
Yeah.
And you might be okay, but in 10 minutes time, you might not be okay. And that's important for people to understand that.
Yeah, and so, those reminders, they do come out of nowhere, really. One I had at work, I'd put my 18-week midwife checkup appointment on my work calendar as a reminder that I needed to tell work I, you know, needed these sort of couple of hours off to go to my appointment. And I'd gone back to work in November, and there was an email about Baby Loss Awareness Week, which was, you know, yes, I understood about Baby Loss Awareness Week. I'd attended some of the events, but that did floor me, but not as much as seeing my calendar entry that I should be at my midwife appointment.
Yeah.
And I had just forgotten to delete it. It's very difficult some days, but other days are okay.
Hmm. You said off air before we came on, we were talking about your workplace.
Yeah.
And you said, obviously, there is still that lack of, when we don't talk about it, they also don't know how to handle you and think, oh, she's back at work, that's all right. And almost... That treat it as a void what happened and the fact that you were off, and just that you are going to go in and be able to perform your usual duties and your usual, you know, daily tasks and work with the team and work with, you know, the audience that you work with. And there is that assumption that that's all right. But actually, you felt like there needed to be a bit of a leeway, didn't you, in your kind of work, that people do need to take into consideration. You have just lost a baby, and that some things at work may need to be adapted to make sure you are okay and you stay okay.
Yeah, absolutely. And my team, so the only person that knew were my direct supervisor and manager. They knew from a safety point of view. They had to know. And it was very much, please keep this to yourself until I'm ready to tell the team. It won't be long, you know, I expect to tell them soon. And my supervisor did ask me while I was off, can I tell the team why you're off? And I said, yeah, do you know what? Tell them. Because I thought when I then went back to work, there'd be a bit of a, there'd be more understanding.
Bit of a buffer.
Yeah. You know, if I'm sat there looking red-eyed or whatever, which I did for quite a lot of the time when I first went back, they'd know, and it wouldn't be an issue. They could just let me get on, you know, and if I stepped out of the office for any reason, they knew to give me a bit of a breather and I'll be back and it'd be okay. And there was a lot of empathy, especially from, you know, my supervisor and then the higher managers. But then when I went back to work, it did feel, to some degree, that it was, she's back now, so she's fine. We expect her to be full cylinders. And don't get me wrong, not my direct supervisor or my manager, but higher up the organisation, if you like, that maybe they weren't fully aware just how impactful this had been on me.
Mm.
Or, you know, maybe they didn't exactly know the reason I was off. They were just aware I was off work.
Yeah.
And I realised when I got back to work, when I was doing some sort of searching on our internal system for support and guidance, that there was a lack of it.
Mm.
And I felt, you know, maybe all of us could do with a bit more education around it.
100%.
You know, there's a lot in the workplaces, you know, support groups for neurodiversity, all these different support groups we have in my organisation for women's health that focus on menopause and endometriosis and fertility. But there was nothing I could find about baby loss. And I thought, I get something from talking about it. Why don't I approach them and say, why can't we have a baby loss group? Mm. So I did that. I contacted them and they said it was a good idea and they'd like to run with it and set up a support group in my organisation, and they'd like me to kind of be a big part of it and lead certain aspects of it. And they said to me, what do you hope to get out from doing like a support group in the organisation? And I said, even if it's just so another member of staff, whether that be a woman that's gone through it or a partner that's in the organisation, that they can find some tools and
support.
Yeah, exactly. Mm. And they can take something away to help support their partner. So it doesn't even have to be the person that's physically gone through it.
Yeah.
But just to know there's resources for them, even if it just, yeah, helps that one person not feel as isolated as I felt. And
it's amazing.
Also, I feel that it's not necessarily that people in the organisation aren't empathetic or understanding. I think there's a lack of general education on the topic because we don't talk about it as much as maybe we could. So that's what I'm hoping for setting up a sort of support group in my work, is to help other people and people that are going to be looking after these members of staff when they come back to work.
Well, that's it. Even colleagues, friends, anyone that knows someone that's lost a baby, you know, there might be someone a bit older in your work that has a grown child that loses a baby, you know, has an adult child and that's their grandchild.
Yeah.
It's just about awareness. It's about education, as you say, and it's about signposting. So you could have the group and signpost to organisations like us that can support them,
absolutely.
Give advice, give training. You know, I said to you, I'd be very happy to come in and do some training with your workplace. You know, it is important because all of these things impact your individual journey of loss. And if one of those things, I know you said like they weren't terrible, but they weren't the best. So we're talking about, you know, they handled it okay. Yeah. There's people that weren't that educated, they handled it quite well, really.
Yeah.
But someone that gets it handled really, really badly, and I know a lot of people that have had it handled really, really badly, it ends up in HR issues, complaints, maybe having to leave their job, low morale, being signed off sick, you know, some constructive dismissal. It could end up into a whole heap of really scary things that make the loss and the experience of the loss 20,000 times worse. Because work impacts us all.
Yeah.
We are all obliged to, you know, go back to work at some point, unless you're lucky enough to have that choice and that option not to. But the people, when we return to work, where we spend most of our time is at work, need to get it, need to be educated, need to support you and make your experience as positive as it can be. And that's something that, you know, I'm quite passionate about, and I really think it's important for employers to get on board with this. You know, even you saying about the groups, all those different groups that they had, they didn't have a baby loss group. When this affects one in four people, that's nuts, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like, and they must have had, you can't be the first person in your workplace to go through this.
No, no, I'm not. And even though only my team were told about what happened, word has, I suppose you can say, got around. And a lady from another team come up to me recently at the photocopier of all places and said, I'm sorry to hear about your news. And I was like, what news? Trying to act a bit blasé, you know, because I was so surprised that this had gone to someone else when at that point I hadn't wanted it to. But she actually said to me, do you know what? I've been through the same. So that, and that was the whole point of me wanting to start up a group.
Yeah.
It's just come a little bit premature to what I wanted to. But yeah, there is so many women out there that have gone through it that we don't know about because they haven't spoken about it yet or haven't felt able to.
Yeah.
So hopefully that will give them the space to, if they choose.
Yeah, 100%. Right, well, thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you for having me. I think
we've ticked off all the things we wanted to talk about. We could talk all day. But if anyone's being affected by anything we're talking about today, as always, please email in. It's kelly@makingmiracles.org.uk. If anyone would like to appear on future podcasts, same email address, drop me a line and we will go from there. It's dead easy, very relaxed, no pressure. So it's nothing to be afraid of. If you want to have a voice like Beck and talk about your baby and give yourself that comfort and that validation, please do feel free to come on and chat with me. Take care. Thank you, Beck.
Thank you.